Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
And we are joined by the one and only Ben Quayle.
Ben Quayle, former congressman from the great state of Arizona.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
It's great to have you.
And now,
to be here. Thanks.
King lobbyist.
Somebody's got to do it.
King of the K Street crowd.
Well, it is. Ben is actually a great example of lobbyists who are, one, good at what they do, but also have integrity and are there for the right reasons.
So what you're saying is he's a rarity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we know a lot of lobbyists.
We know a lot of lobbyists, don't we?
And
yeah. And then we've done some lobbying ourselves.
Yeah, and Ben's one of the good ones.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
but
yeah, thanks for being here,
Ben. Before we get into that.
This has been actually a long time coming. I've been asking him to come on for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I know. Back and forth to D.C. It's just it's tough to get the schedules.
I think he was just waiting to see if we were actually a legit operation.
Does this thing have any legs at all?
Well, I thought you guys were like a kiosk in Dillard's when I looked up the address.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, almost. We could be.
We're right there.
We probably should, start one.
Yeah. So, Ben, you served in Congress for a term. Or is it one or two?
Just one.
One. When you look at what's happening now, I'm sure you're happy that you're not there as an actual member of the House right now.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me all the time, would you go back? And I'm really happy not being there right now. It's just completely and totally dysfunctional. It's unfortunate that, the Republicans have the majority in the House and it's not a functioning majority.
Right.
They can't get to 218 on anything. They have a two right now with absences. They have a two vote majority. And you have no leverage. You have zero leverage unless you can point to the Democratic Senate, the Democratic president, that you can pass something only with Republican votes, and they can't do it.
Yeah.
And so you just lose all, and people point like, why can't they do anything? Why can't we get this thing and this thing? I mean, you have the appropriations process coming up on March 1st and March 8th, and they really don't have any leverage because they're going to have to rely on Democratic votes to get this thing passed.
And if they do that, then Johnson, the new speaker, is threatened with a motion to vacate, just like what they did with McCarthy, who had to work with Democrats to
correct
it, right? Just to make sure the government operates. It's simple math.
It's like on all of these things, McCarthy went and directed negotiated directly with Biden. So on the debt limit package, he's just like, negotiate with Biden. Biden will get the Dems in line. And that was the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Johnson just doesn't have that experience.
Right, right.
And it was such a huge mistake to get rid of McCarthy.
Yeah, we have said that many times here. We have friends of the show
who have been on the show who led that fight.
Well,
unfortunately,
I don't know that Biggs led the fight. I mean, I think he.
I think Eli Crane thinks he led the fight.
Maybe. But it was Gates, and because none of those, Gates was the only one willing to actually go pull the trigger, and then the eight. Went
Everybody
along.
Fell in line,
right?
And
Gates has, and the reason he pulled the trigger that we've talked about several times is his own ethical issues.
Some serious issues. Yeah,
he's got some problems.
McCarthy, to his credit, was not going to let go of.
Yeah. The chickens are going to come home to roost on that one for sure. But Ben, there are actually, we have some listeners who may not know your history. So give us a little bit of where you came from, who your dad is.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
How's he doing?
he's doing well. He lives here in the Valley. A lot of people don't know. It's Dan Quayle, former vice president. A lot of people don't know he actually grew up in the Valley.
That's right.
Went to Kiva Elementary, went to Scottsdale High, and then moved back to Indiana when he was a junior in high school, I think, something like that. So he always considered, Indiana and Arizona home. My grandparents lived in Wickenburg for a long time. So we'd been coming out here for since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Visited my grandparents up in Wickenburg. And for those who haven't been to Wickenburg, it's a great place.
Wickenburg is the best.
Yeah, it's awesome. What's
the dude ranch out there?
Well, you got that? Los Cab.
Los Cab. Yeah. Los Caballeros. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great.
Been there many times.
It's a great place. So I grew up basically in Washington area in Virginia. My dad was in the House. He got elected to the House when he was 29, Senate when he was 33. So when I got elected to the House when I was 33, and he was like, "You're such an underachiever."
Yeah. He was already
like,
in
the Senate. You get, I mean, come on, aim higher, man.
Wow. And then
VP at 41.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is that Biden and Trump are both older than my dad. Yeah. And he's been out of politics since 1992.
It is pretty amazing.
That is
freaking amazing. Because I was thinking about it. I mean, they're both older than Clinton, who hasn't been president for 20-some years. Older than Bush. I mean, it's just nuts that this is who we have.
This is the
as
choice.
Our option.
I mean,
right,
this is the choice.
We have 300 some million people.
Right. And these are the two.
And these are going to be the options.
Well, an additional 20 that Biden's let in that are unaccounted for. But who's counting?
Yeah. So as you look at what your time in the House was like, in comparison to now, I mean, is it worth anybody actually going? I mean, to me, the concern I have is that it's so bad that we are literally making it so that nobody of any value goes. I mean, that anyone who can actually help make it better will actually run.
Yeah, yes, it's. I mean, it is worth it for those that want to actually enact some sort of change. And I want to encourage those that have the right discipline and the right values to try to do that. But it is making it just more unpalatable for people to go. And they're also passing these weird rules of, like, I mean, I know people are saying, oh, the stock banning, you know, trading ban. I'm against that because, A, the rules still apply to members of Congress, right? You can't insider trade.
Right. Right.
And if you start putting these different rules on it for members of Congress, you're just going to get the ultra wealthy who have already made their money or the ultra weird who don't care about money.
Right.
And will never make $174,000.
Yeah, it's a pay raise when they go to Congress.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And and they're just there for the pension anyway. They're there to wait out their time and get the congressional pension.
I mean, it's not that great. So
no.
We shouldn't be passing laws. It sounds good. It plays to different bases, but passing laws to make it more difficult to get good people into Congress, because it is a sacrifice. You're sacrificing your time with your family. You're sacrificing, obviously, your career. But right now, it's so polarizing, and they're just sniping at one another all the time.
Yeah, it's constant.
You mentioned something earlier, though, that I think was instrumental. And, you know, when you look at the past and the way Congress was run, and that is you grew up in D.C. So your dad was there. You grew up in and around D.C., right?
Yes.
And that was a different time where
it's really it comes down to, like, the delegations, really. Like the Indiana delegation, all of them lived in the D.C. area.
Sure.
And then we'd go back. McCain is the one who started it, where the Arizona delegation lived here and did that commute.
Right.
And I don't know which is better.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's what I'm asking. In terms of your perspective, what do you think creates more comedy, creates more, you know, friendships? I've heard both sides, and I look back at those times, and, you know, I knew a school teacher who taught at McLean, you know, elementary, and she had everybody's kids in her class. And Democrats, Republicans, independent, whoever. And it just created a different environment, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, if your kids are on the same soccer team.
Yeah, or the same flag football team,
right,
lacrosse team.
Or go to
team.
The same church, you know, you're less likely to get...
You're less likely to hate the other person, right?
Yeah, exactly. But on the flip side, and for me when I was growing up, it was nice because my dad could come home.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember my dad didn't really go to the State of the Union. He always knew that that was the night when he was going to have votes. So he would come home and watch the State of the Union from on the TV. So that the family aspect, you're closer to your family, but you know, and then when you go back to the district or the state, you just really work it hard on those times when you're back. But I don't, I would not want to live in DC nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little different.
It was a lot smaller. I like living in Arizona.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do have it. We are very blessed to be
here. The weather in DC is, you know,
it's the worst.
Not awesome. It's not the most ideal.
So what kind of stuff are you doing these days, and what are the issues that you are focused on that matter to what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, my group is Venture Government Strategies. We have a wide range of clients working on various different issues. You know, right now in the immediate term is getting these appropriations bills and then the tax package as well, because that's important to a lot of businesses that we represent. And, you know, I think that they're in a good place. It's still to be determined on how they're going to bring the appropriations bills to the House floor, whether it's under suspension or under a rule. But with the rule, you have to get Dems to vote for it. Because,
right.
I mean, Sean, when you were back, like, I mean, I knew every once in a while they would take down a rule.
It was pretty rare.
But now it's you can't get a rule.
Right. It's like they don't even put it up because they know it's not going to happen.
It's crazy.
It is completely different. It is completely different.
So those are the things that we're working on right now. And then there's like more long-term issues that we're trying to deal with. It's a tough landscape right now.
Yeah. And when you look out 5-10 years, what do you see as the biggest threats to what we face in America, and what are the biggest opportunities?
Biggest threat is the debt.
Interesting.
I mean, it just is going to overcome everything. Social Security will have a 23% cut in what, 6 years?
Yeah. 35, I think it is.
Nobody's talking about it. None of the big candidates, you know, the presidential candidates want to touch it. And next year we're going to be over $1 trillion in debt service for a year.
Insane.
So, I mean, all of that is going to crowd everything else out. So I think from a national security standpoint, from a domestic policy standpoint, from an economic standpoint, that debt issue is the biggest issue that's out there. And it scares me because nobody's dealing with it.
I mean, literally, and actively running away from it, frankly.
Correct.
And making it worse.
Yeah, the thing is like, you know, Medicare starts becoming insolvent soon as well, and nobody wants to touch it. And, I mean, we tried to do that in 2011. The House passed something that would reform Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And that's when, you know, the Dems put Paul Ryan pushing
off
the cliff.
Grandma off the cliff in the wheelchair.
But it was, you know, every year that you don't address these things. And, you know, the $34 trillion that we have right now is not even taking into account our, you know, liabilities with Medicare, Medicaid,
right,
and Social Security. So, I mean, it's a scary thing. You can't be a leader in the world if you're just drowning in that much debt. And it's a global phenomenon, because people promise things that they just can't deliver on. Opportunities, I mean, quite frankly, you know, unleashing our natural resources. I mean, we have so much potential on oil, natural gas. I mean, the Biden administration stopping LNG is just ridiculous. Yeah. LNG exports. I mean, I read today that some LNG exporter just announced layoffs of 3,000 people.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. And we keep saying, we need to stand up to Putin.
Right.
We're cutting our
right.
LSG to Europe. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
It's insane.
But, yeah, I mean, right now, I think whoever the president is, we need to make sure that the U.S. is the leader in the world. Right now, our allies and our enemies see weakness from a president who's not there mentally, a Congress who is dysfunctional, And they are using that as an opportunity to do, like, this is what's happening in the Middle East. This is what's happening in Europe and Ukraine. I mean, it's because of U.S. weakness that people are taking advantage of that. And that's why, you know, China continues to push down on Taiwan and everywhere else. And that's what happens when the U.S. is perceived as weak. And so we need to have that robust U.S. power, soft power. I'm not saying go in everywhere, but we have to have that soft power that keeps the world aligned.
Yeah. I mean, as trite as it may sound, I mean, Reagan was right. It's peace through strength.
Yep.
I mean,
oh, absolutely.
We have to project strength. And you know, if you look back, I mean, I think this...
Are you saying that Joe Biden is just not strong?
Well, you know, when you pull out of Afghanistan in the way he did, well, he just sent the message to Putin, to Hamas, I mean, everybody. It's like, okay, guess what? They're not gonna do anything.
Yeah, the perfect example of the domino effect right there.
Well, and on the Hamas front, I mean, all of this in Hamas and Israel is due to the fact that the Biden administration freed up $6 billion to Iran.
Yeah,
no question. There were no rockets going in, but very few, because there was no money coming from Iran into Gaza.
We have funded this entire thing.
Yes.
And with UNRWA as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we funded that completely, and we've been funding both sides. It's been unbelievable. And for the Biden administration to continue to criticize Israel, when Israel is very united in this, the Israeli parliament had a vote this week, and they are going full bore, and they're going to destroy Hamas. And they're not going to talk about a Palestinian state, which, by the way, has been proposed for the last 50, 60 years, and the Palestinians have rejected every single one. So it's just a non-starter for them. They're going to finish the job.
Yeah. I mean, I think they need to. We can't allow another October 7th.
Oh, no.
No.
And it's going to, you know.
We certainly can't allow another October 7th that we implicitly paid for.
Well, and
I mean.
And we also have to be careful, you know, if we show weakness there, then we're vulnerable here.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the radical Islamists look at things not in decades or centuries, but in millennia.
Yeah.
And so they're playing the long game for sure.
Yeah. As is China.
Yeah. Yeah. They look at it in centuries, but still, I mean, we look at it in minutes, whatever our Instagram reel.
Yeah.
Oh God.
It's like, eek. So,
well, and that's why we have the endemic problems that we have financially with the country, because we're not looking forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we're looking for instant gratification.
Every 2 years, because it's just about the election cycles. Yeah. And so we have a hard time tackling the long-term problems that we have, because you're only looking towards, okay, well, there's a midterm. Oh, there's a presidential election. So it's every 2 years you're making these decisions. You have like a year to do something meaningful that you, if you're making the tough decisions, you know that it's going to be used against you in an election.
Yeah.
But it's the right thing to do, but it's tough because then you go, well, then we lose power, and then they might just rescind everything that we just did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a Republican standpoint, I'm in this election cycle, I think Steve Daines has done a great job on recruiting. From the Senate standpoint, I mean, in Ohio, Montana, West Virginia, the three states that are needed to flip the majority. So that's, you know, kind of something that could be there with Senate majority for a while.
Right.
Just because of the makeup of the states. And that way you can keep the filibuster.
Right.
Not make D.C. a state. Because people joke about that was a real thing.
It was literally. I mean, and I've said this before. I mean, we owe such a debt of gratitude to Senator Sinema,
absolutely,
for standing up to the Democrats. On
absolutely,
that. Because had she not, we would have Puerto Rico would be a state, DC would be a state. There'd be 14 Supreme Court justices, not 9. I mean, they were serious about all these issues, and they were going to move forward. And she said no. Thank God, she said no. Well, I mean, that would have completely changed the country.
Well, and that's a great segue. I mean, how do you see, you know, Arizona politics playing out in the next 9 months?
It's still unclear if Senator Sinema runs. And then I think it kind of comes down to the presidential in this state. And I mean, Sean, he's more of an expert than I am, but I just think it's, if Trump wins by enough margin, like 3 to 4 points, I think he pulls Kerry over. If Biden wins, I think Rubin wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right on that. I think that Trump outperforms the Senate, I mean, and Kerry.
Well, given the environment right now, do you think Kirsten is even in it?
I mean, I
wouldn't if I were her. I mean, I'd just take a victory lap in terms of, like, I stood up on my principles. I saved the Senate. She can literally say that she saved the Senate.
She can say she saved the country. Yeah. I mean, and that's not hyperbole. I mean, she did.
I'm going to go off and make a bunch of money now.
Right. I mean,
and do my thing.
The fact is, like, she votes with Democrats, what, 97% of the time?
Yeah.
Like, okay, she's a Democrat. And then they just all just went after her just because she wouldn't change the filibuster rules, wouldn't pack the Supreme Court, wouldn't make D.C. a state. Like, these radical things. And then she was getting chased in the back. I just felt so bad for her because she was just a normal Democrat, like, who voted with her party 97% of the time. These two things that she stood up against, and she's getting chased into the bathroom at an airport. It was ridiculous.
It's an example of the vitriol that elected officials face. And the worst vitriol is always from their own side, right?
Right.
The hardcore right is always worse to Republicans than to Democrats, and the hardcore left is always worse to Democrats than they are to Republicans. It's kind of crazy, but the worst hits come from your own people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Just nuts. Well, Ben, we appreciate you taking the time. We know you're
absolutely
a busy man.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to need to have you come back.
Well, I mean, he's busy preparing for a big volleyball championship, which is in a week.
Championship?
Well, I mean, a playoff tournament that our girls who play together have a great chance of winning.
Nice.
Because they're on a really good team.
They won last weekend.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, they can take this.
I am like in that, like, my older kids did volleyball, and now I got to wait for my younger kids to get there. So I'm on the in-betweens of where you guys are right now.
Well, I think when you finally, especially with girls, when they finally find a sport, this has been the case with Campbell for sure, that she just loves, and she loves that team, and she loves your wife and the coaches, and she's like, do I have volleyball this weekend? Why don't I have volleyball this weekend?
Yeah, it's fun.
Why aren't we practicing?
It's fun.
I don't know.
My oldest is in club volleyball, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
But that's what she wants to do. But she loves it.
That's what she wants to do because you're kids, which is great.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to watch them get better. And they're going to take the championship next weekend.
I hope so.
Without a doubt.
I love the optimism. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here, Ben.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And God bless you.
All right. Take care, everybody.